he received a letter from the First Lady, who is also the Education Minister, about this disparity, and he has addressed it. The question is, people are asking, why wouldn't yourself and your organization try to engage the First Lady, who is also the Education Minister, to help address some of your concerns or take the matter up to the President?
What didn't we do in terms of engaging them? We had first sessions, we had letters written, and they chose to take their decision. Which decision is a decision to actually take the education system into the high dependence level, because now public service is divided completely, and you cannot talk of service delivery when the workers are in such a stressful environment that does not support them to do their work as they are expected to do.
So, Philbert, how are you handling this issue of division? That is, the present latest action will further make the matter worse. How are you handling these among members of your organization who are receiving different things?
First of all, it is not the problem of the workers who are receiving the enhancement. That needs to be very clear, because for them, they have been given. And therefore, we cannot say, why are you receiving? When they give you, you receive. But what we are telling our members and what we are emphasizing is that we should not be victims of this kind of divide and rule. We should remain united as the teaching fraternity, and we must advocate and continue to tell government that when things don't work out, they should not blame anybody, but blame themselves for their inaction and deciding not to listen to the voices that we are giving them the right direction.
So what do you think is the best way forward to address this disparity that you have been talking about? What do you think is the best way forward?
The best way forward is government to look for money and enhance salaries for those teachers of primary, those teachers of arts and humanities who did not get the enhancement, so that there is harmony at the work, and then we serve the innocent learners of this country who have a right to education like any other person.
Philbert Baguma is the General Secretary of the Uganda National Teachers Union. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. ID for Africa, an international NGO, is calling on the United Nations to adopt September 16 as an International Identity Day. This, the group says, mark UN Sustainable Development Goal 16.9, which calls for a state identity for all individuals by 2030. To commemorate the day, ID for Africa plans to organize a live virtual broadcast. A panel comprising identification experts will address why inclusion appears to remain a major challenge for so many people across Africa. Members of the panel will make recommendations to address the problem. ID for Africa, which was established in 2014, aims to help develop robust ecosystems in the service of development and humanitarian action. For more about plans to encourage more digital identification across Africa, I spoke with Joseph J. Atik. He is the executive chairman of ID for Africa.
What is happening in the world goes beyond digital identity. It is an entire digital transformation. It's a reworking of the way we work, the way we live, the way we interact, the way we pay, the way we share data. So this whole fourth industrial revolution relies on transforming all aspects of life and enabling more in the digital domain. And of course, Africa is no exception. Africa needs to guarantee a bright future for its people, especially the young people who are now constitute the largest group in Africa on the continent. And therefore, there is significant interest in digital transformation in general. And obviously, at the heart of digital transformation, there is always a need for digital identity, because you need to know who you are dealing with in order to enable them to engage in transactions and interactions.
So why digital? What are the key advantages of digital ID?
So productivity is number one. So digital economies lead to massive productivity. They lead to economies at a distance, and they allow you to bypass the lack of infrastructure, physical infrastructure, because they allow you to transact at a distance. We believe digital platforms and digital identity can lead to better inclusion, because people in the remote areas could be included because it's easier to give them a mobile phone with a digital identity than it is to build massive highways and have goods and services being connected to them in that manner. So the value proposition is very clear. And, of course, the whole world has been moving in that direction, but it got accelerated with the COVID pandemic. Countries that had digital infrastructure and digital identity were able to provide people who were locked down or unable to go to work with cash transfers, with some assistance in order so they can survive the pandemic.
Doctor, I think we are coming up on the ID Day, September 16th. Remind our audience what this is about briefly.
Yes. Identity Day is a day which we commemorate every year on the, as you said, 16th September, because it is a reminder for us that we have an asset that's very valuable to us, and that's our human identity. We called for the recognition of 16th September as Identity Day in 2018 in Abuja. And we basically called upon the countries to recognize that day as a way to sensitize the public, as a way to also reaffirm their commitment to leaving no one behind, to giving them identity, et cetera. So every year, more and more countries and more organizations join forces to commemorate that day.
So I know your organization, ID for Africa, has been helping African countries in their journeys towards inclusive and responsible identity programs. Recently, you had the annual general meeting in Kenya. Talk to me briefly about the outcome of it.
The agenda was focused on accelerating how you deploy digital identity by looking at it as a public infrastructure. And so some of the most visible things that happened at that meeting, we've had about 800 government delegates, and there was a clear hunger for building capacity. It felt like many of these governments and these representatives of government recognized that they are running out of time, and they had to come learn how to quickly deploy responsible ID systems. We've also had President Ruto, president of Kenya, who came and spoke as part of the speaker lineup. He spoke for 40 minutes about the importance of digital identity in the African context and how we need a political commitment to ensure that this doesn't waver and this does not become a secondary priority in Africa. So it was nice to see the political will. And the agenda was very productive in the sense that we came up with several recommendations which we don't have time to take on, but we will continue them and explore them on our webinar series, which we call the Livecast.
Joseph J. Atik is the Executive Chairman of ID for Africa. He spoke with me from the French capital, Paris. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Klote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Youth from African Collection. Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The draw for the inaugural Africa Football League quarterfinals in Cairo has produced mouth-watering ties between some of the continent's biggest clubs. Tanzania's Simba SC will host Egyptian giants Al-Hakli in the first leg of the first quarterfinal on October 20th in the draw conducted on Saturday by Ghana legend Asamoah Gyan and Angolan model Maria Borges. Al-Hakli have won a record 11 CAF Champions League titles, with Simba seeking the maiden semi-final appearance in the new AFL.
NPL. Five-time Champions League winners TP Mazembe of DR Congo will take on Tunisian Cup specialist Aspirants in the second quarterfinal first leg on October 21. Nigerian outfit Enyimba, the first Nigerian club to win the CAF Champions League in 2003 and 2004, will face Moroccan heavyweights Wydad Casablanca, who have three titles. Petro de Luanda from Angola and Mamelodi Sundowns from South Africa will conclude the quarterfinal matchups. Petro's participation will, however, depend on an appeal they have filed with the Angolan Football Association over a discipline matter. The quarterfinal first leg will take place from October 20th to the 22nd, with a return leg scheduled between October 24th to the 25th to decide the semi-finalists. In marathon news, Ugandan Vitalis Wimoy and Chamoz Viola Munrera were winners in the second edition of the Mount Rwenzori Marathon that took place in the scenic town of Kasese, Uganda on Saturday. The Rwenzori Marathon ranges, known for their breathtaking beauty, provided a stunning backdrop to the marathon, drawing 2,000 participants from 13 countries, including famous international sports commentator Rob Walker.
I can see the potential in this event. It's going to be a big, big part of promoting this area of Uganda going forward, because we need people to know that Uganda has mountains.
Vitalis Kwemoi clocked 2 hours, 17 minutes and 21 seconds to beat second place Bernard Cheptoe, who came in 2 hours, 17 minutes, 22 seconds. While Shatrack Kimayo clocked 2 hours, 17 minutes, 37 seconds to take bronze. Kwemoi said it was indeed a difficult race to win.
The race was too tough because going was a little bit hard, but coming back was a little bit slow. And I'm not used to wear slow. I'm a little bit faster in hill work, in the hill.
In the women's category, Viola Chamoz Murewa won in 2 hours, 49 minutes, 3 seconds. In basketball news, South Sudan earned the nation's first Olympic berth in any sport on Saturday and did so with a team filled with refugees and the children of refugees from the Water Nation. The Bright Stars, as they are known, won the bid allotted for Africa with a 101-78 victory over Angola, triggering tears and hugs from players as several dozen fans waved the young country's flag. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's 1 month's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. There is a general consensus amongst BRIC members that the 15th summit of BRIC group has been successful and see it as a historical event. This is not a hyperbole. During 3 days of consultations, debate, informal sessions, retreats, and bilateral discussions, the BRIC members were frank, clear-thinking, and not hesitant to point out their view of the current international situation. They are in common agreement, one, that they do not want to be a small, inclusive group of member states who have the same views on many issues. For them, the BRIC group is a group of nations who have a shared history of colonialism and imperialism and underdevelopment. It is for this group, for this reason, that the group seeks to be inclusive and to appreciate diverse opinion in harmony, but they do have a common purpose, and they also wish to economize or end underdevelopment and to proceed on a developed stage. They are not worried if the expanded group members do not agree on many international issues. They see this as, in fact, a plus. The members also agreed that they do not agree that there is a system of hierarchical values before which all other states must kowtow. They believe that a world order is not shaped by a small group, but should be the work of the global community. That is why they stress again and again that they believe in multilateralism based on the letter and spirit of the United Nations Charter, which pledged to save mankind from the scourge of war and the maintenance of international peace and security. They express disapproval of the dominance of multilateral organizations of the Western powers, and they want more democratization of these institutions, including the financial institutions. The group members want to stress that they are not in confrontation with the West, and they do not seek to replace existing organizations of like-mindedness. In fact, they would wish for cooperation, and they stressed that in particular the democratization of the Bretton Woods institution. They also made clear that they do not agree that member states of BRICS should choose whom they want to have as their partner and not be told those which should not be their members or their partners. The decision to expand BRICS is a joint one. It is reached by consensus, and it was not haphazard and not sudden. According to the host president, Cyril Ramaphosa, the consultation of the expansion has been going on for a very, very, very long time. And let me add that at the sideline of this summit, the president of China, Xi Jinping, met with a large number of heads of state of African countries in the China-Africa consultation. He expressed China's commitment to work closely with African countries, particularly he pledged the plan to industrialize Africa, a long, long expected objective of the African states. And he pledged two programs, one for $10 billion, another for $4 million, that should help this goal and purpose. Let us note that just after the close of the summit, already the airwaves were being filled with those who are not well informed for trying to minimize the importance of the summit. I dare say any careful study of the closing session of the summit will prove that the efforts will be futile. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. Our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English Service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English Service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. Remember, as the elders say, a person who chases a chicken is due a fall. I'm your host, Peter Cote.